banjo player. And Kim, she played. They liked her playing.
How about if we just run over these tunes and just tell me what you know about them and where you learned them?
All right. Okay.
Patty on the Pike.
I was one of French's.
French Pike.
I had French
that
Pike.
That version.
That come from old Saul Gardner. You know, the natural tuning of Patty on the Pike like you play. Mm-hmm. Now, people get that confused.
It's a different tune.
It's a different tune. Monroe, or Lester Flatt, Paul Warren played it like I do. Uh-huh. He's only better I know I've played that too. Yeah.
Going Downtown.
Well, that was French special.
Yeah.
Yeah, that come in Webster County, way back there. It was really an old Negro spiritual to start off with. But it got in the carpenter's hands, and that's where it come down to. All the people in Clay County played it after Harmon Carpenter come from Webster Springs down here in state one winter and fiddled it. Mm-hmm. And Fred said Harmon was better than he was. I never heard him. He died. But Fred said I couldn't fiddle with Harmon Carpenter. No way.
And how was Harmon related to French, do you know?
French's uncle.
French's uncle.
French's uncle. He was French's father's brother.
And Blue-Eyed Miss?
From my grandmother, Morrison.
Rosie was?
Rosie. Rosie Ann Morse. Mm-hmm.
Anne's Hornpipe.
Now I got that tune off on the tape from, I can't remember that fiddler's name, North Carolina. And Vince Gerald plays it too.
Not Tommy Gerald.
No, Vince. You know Vince.
Vince?
Yeah, he's a violin teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he taught me. He knows what he's doing.
So that's one you learned in recent years?
Yeah, in the last 5 or 6 years. I learned from Matt Fiddler out of North Carolina. He's pretty good, you know. He had the North Carolina swing, you know how they fiddle. It's different from ours.
Not Tommy Hunter or something?
No, I can't think of his name. Same
young man or old man?
Middle age. What in the devil was he? I have trouble remembering all these fiddlers, Jerry. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't a prominent. He just played here and there, you know. And that's where I got hooked on that Anne's Hornpipe.
Camp Chase.
That was Carpenter Special. And I get it awful near to him, awful near. Same. Well, I wasn't trying to copy him, but I'd say that in much difference in his tall unless he drags a bass. Sometimes he would drag that bass when he come off onto the D string, which I don't do. And, I just save it for the bass. We're close.
I guess French learned it from Saul.
Oh, he learned it from his daddy, Tom. Tom learned it from Saul, his daddy. Yeah, he'd come right on down. And Ernie's got it from somebody. I don't know who Ernie got it from. Ernie's a little different, isn't it?
Just a little bit.
Yeah. And he's shelving rocks a little different. It's in his bow one, not which. Oh man, Ernie's a good fiddler.
Pretty Little Shoes.
Oh, that was French's special, yeah.
And Doc White played too, right?
Doc learned it. He finally learned it from French. They were together a long time. Yeah.
Boating Up the Sandy.
Well, now that tune started. Carpenter's played that. I was going to tell you, I forgot my grandmother played that. French played it. And Doc White finally played it. And me, that's only 4 people I know of. A lot of them play it now. But France played it awful good, you know.
Yeah, we're going to call the tape Boating Up Sandy. And here it says Boating Up the Sandy.
It's Boating Just Up Sandy.
Sandy.
Sandy, right.
That's what I
thought. Well, Jerry, now what do you think of that tape?
I think it's good.
You think it's good fiddling?
Yeah.
Well, like I say, it never hurts my feelings. If a man tells me my faults, I try to turret probing.
Cuckoo's Nest.
Now that Cuckoo's Nest I got from Ed Haley. I got that from him the first thing as quick as I could. Mm-hmm. Now, Haley'd play it either way. He'd play it in A or G. I can play it in A, but I think it's too sharp. I like it in G better. Mm-hmm. He played E or G, or A or G, the one you wanted. And I fought that thing to get that quick F in there. Mm-hmm. And Haley'd put that in there, and he had opened back on it some way, but I'm close.
Mm-hmm. Ernie plays that.
I never heard him play it.
Yeah, he does. He said he learned it from an old man named George Hammonds when he was a kid.
Yeah, I've heard Dad talk about George Hammonds.
Yeah?
But I got Haley's version and when he played it in G, and I just never got away from it. I like the bow and I like that dip in the, on the F chord.
Little Rose.
Little Rose was a carpenter's national anthem, you might say. They'd play that above anything else. When they blew or our friends would take spells of drink pretty heavy. And when he was getting over and feeling bad, he'd pull that fiddle out and play that Little Rose.
And, you want to put the tell a story of that, Little Rose? That's good. It goes back to Civil War.
Right. Well, the way friends told me, you know, it was in the mountains of Virginia at that time. Now, Saul Carpenter told Tom, and Tom and Harmon told French, and they taught it to French. And you know, back in them days, there'd be one girl in the country, and maybe among a half a dozen families. This boy and this girl got to going together, and her name was Rose. And he went to the army, or the war, and come back, and I guess she kind of lost out her affection for him, and she just got to. They finally got married, though, but he couldn't hold her. She got to run around on him. And the way the story goes, Tom said this guy was an awful fiddle player. And she left one evening to go after a bucket of water in the spring. She never come back. And he just got the phone with that fiddle, and he figured she wasn't going to come back. And he just put it, Little Rose is gone again. But he changed his version. He said, I'll call this tune the Little Rose. So that's how it started. And he evidently had enough talent to compose music. And it started right there. And the friends said that to him. Then people could play it. They played it all the time. Like a Red Wing, you know. So that's the way that tune was composed.
Red Apple Rag.
Oh, that's a bluegrass rag. I got to just warm me up. I got that old Wise, Chubby Wise. Mm-hmm. And Baker, Kenny Baker plays it. Oh, yeah. A lot of people don't like it, but it warms a man up.
It's Arthur Smith tune, I think, isn't it?
Right. He composed Red Apple and the Dixon County Blues. Johnson plays that. And he composed several. Arthur Smith was more of a blues fiddler, but good, the best. And Ed Haley said he knew 30 fiddle tunes, and that was all. And Ed Haley said he was a top fiddler. Said as far as he's concerned, he and Clark Kessner was the best. He liked Clark. He said Clark would get wound up and fiddle too fast, which he did. But you couldn't mark him short. Kessner could fiddle. And I was taught, Jerry, not to burn a fiddle up. I play sometimes faster than others, but friends taught me, he said, if you can't get no sound out of that fiddle from one note to another, you don't belong to fiddle. He said, I want to hear the sound. I want to hear it all. And he wouldn't push your fiddle too fast, not unless he's playing for a dance, chicken reel or something like that. He'd speed that up. But to sit down and fiddle, And maybe I don't fiddle quite fast enough. I fiddle faster up there than I usually do. And it hit me. You know, I could think of so many things. Now, well, some friends taught you better than that. You were walking over a lot of notes. But I had a little tension on me, and I was trying. And ordinarily, I don't do that. That hit me like a ton of bricks. You run over a lot of notes there. Skipped. And I know I did.
Westport girl.
That was Francis' favorite. That's what he won his contest on by the whole time. And there's two licks there, Jerry. You played good. As you know, when you come back off that E string and even up on the D, you got them two licks in there. That's what fouls people up if you don't get it. You can't smooth out. And I played that tune for a year or two. And it took me 5 years to learn to Camp Chase the way Carpenter played. I ain't saying I'm good. It took me 5 years. Mm-hmm. And them cross keys and that bow on that shelving rock, I think I worked 2 years on it. Sometimes I miss a jet. But anything you want to know, if I know it, I'll tell you. But
temperance real?
Now, the temperance real. Carpenter played that. But he had it confused. He called it a Jimmy in the Swamp, but the Jimmy in the Swamp's another tune. Mm-hmm. But that's where I got started on the Timberance Reel, and he played it off good in another tune there. Now, Ed Haley called a Stony Point Gilroy. Mm-hmm. You see the difference? Mm-hmm. And Fritz called it the Wild Horse. And Arthur Smith called it Stony Point. The Possum Hunters out of Tennessee called it Stony Point. Fruit Jar Drinkers. Lois Vye, that fiddler out of Nashville, he called it Stony Point. Georgie Slim called it Stony Point. So, you know.
Yeah, in Virginia they call it Old Dad.
Yeah.
Old Sport.
And Lee Trippard called it. I said, Dave, eat a whole cake. You know, but Lee didn't play it. He didn't run the high part.
Dick stole the whole cake.
Dick stole the whole cake. And so, you know, it's just a matter.
Did you ever hear the temperance reel called The Devil in Georgia?
No, I didn't.
I think Woody Simmons calls it that.
The Devil in Georgia is that there Rocky Mountain goat. Uh-huh. And the deer walk, in Ohio they call it the deer walk. Mm-hmm. Now Woody Simmons is all wet there. And about that ain't. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I ain't played that tune for God, I don't know how long.
That Morning Flower.
That was Ed Haley's. I got on that. That's Ed Haley's tune. The women folks liked that, the older women, they liked that, and he'd sing it. He could sing it, you know, if he wasn't mad about something. And that there, like Frankie and Johnny, what did he call that same tune? The tune of the fiddle. My God, he could fiddle that and sing that as pitiful. You ever hear him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But that record didn't give him no justice. That was just a...
What, you remember how any of the words went to Morning Flower? What it was about or anything? Was it a love song?
No, I didn't. He said, go, 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 little children, go, 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 down in the valley where the flowers grow. And then he put a lot of other stuff to it. I might try to remember later. And God, he could handle that, you know. I'd get back on his run that there A on the D. Get a little slide in there. You put a slide in there. Jerry, what was unusual about Ed Haley? He'd know where your fiddle cleared up, you know. And to make it easy for him, he'd come down on that fiddle neck just like he's making your chords. Mm-hmm. But fill it either way. Mm-hmm. I've never seen nothing like it. Mm-hmm. But you make it, ask him to play a horn pipe, he'd give you a cussing. He said, I despise them things. And that's Scottish French stuff. I don't want to fool with it. And far in the mountain, he'd cuss you out if you ask him to play that. He said, That's Natchez Indians too. And some other tune there. Oh, that Forkadeer. Oh, God. He... Now, Johnson could play it with him. That B that Johnson runs in there sounds good to me. Can you play it like that?
I fooled with it a little.
I'm going to get that. I've got a tape of him. I like that. My friend said it is only two bars for the Forkadeer. I don't know, but Johnson's got a part there I like. Maybe he made it himself. I don't know. But Ed Haley runs something similar to it. Mm-hmm. And I worked with a little bit, and he said, now that ain't no good. Just put that, just play it like everybody else does. Burl Hammond's played it good. Mm-hmm. And old German played it good when he was able.
Mm-hmm. Ralph Stinson?
Has one of Carpenter's tunes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom Carpenter and French played that. Now, there's only two people played that.
Somebody, I think, you see if you see if this means anything to you. Somebody told me old John
McCune.
McCune. Maybe made that tune?
John was supposed to have composed it, but there's always a question whether he or Harmon Carpenter did. But Dad always said that John McCune, he thought John had more of it at the time than Harmon did. And I can't remember him naturally, but Dad said he was equal to Michael Wayne in the cross key, you know. And he wouldn't work a lick at nothing. They said he's never known to work 5 minutes. Nothing.
McCune?
Yeah. All he done was fill.
That was Malthus Stinson was something about a murder or something?
No. French knowed the story. And old Harmon Carpenter was there that day. In the old days, when they was logging that country, they had a picnic right at the mouth of Stinson. You know where the mouth of Stinson is? At the bottom, it runs to the left down there. They had a big picnic and they had some musicians there. And one of these fellas that runs in my mind was a Chinnith. And the other one, a Hambrick. And they was loggers, lumberjacks, bull of the woods, strong men. And they got to wrestling people, a lot of them young men, you know, strong. They were, don't know if they was drinking or not, French never said, but they had a big dinner and a music playing. And he said, now, Wilson said, I want to tell you, them old fiddlers, if there's a little prize up, they wouldn't compete against each other. They wouldn't play against each other. He said, they'd say, now that the contest is off, there'd be no contest. He said, they was out of way. They wouldn't play against each other, no way. And Harmon Carpenter said, there might be some damn fool think I could beat the other man when I can't. And he said, we don't like that. But anyway, these two fellas got to wrestle, and they weighed over 200 pounds apiece. And they wrestled for 3 or 4 hours. One couldn't ride the other. And finally, they just quit. And the next day, this Chinnith evidently pulled something in his insides. He got sick, and that night he died. And it was a sad time, you know. They was prominent, well-known men, and old John McCune believed in a lot of that witchcraft anyway, and he had some skill on the fiddle. Got him and Harmon Carpenter started working on a tune or something to of it in memory of that picnic. So I don't know whether John or Harmon, that's how the mouth stents started. Mm-hmm. And then I got a Vinnie injury. Now there ain't no way that I'll say anything to an old man hurt his feelings. Or anybody else for knowing. Now he'd got back up after that into Pocahontas County. And I wouldn't have said that to Sherman for nothing, no way. And I played that to him. Well, he said, up here, Wilson, I said, we changed that. We call that down south. Well, I never said nothing. I said, who started? Well, he said, oh, Edney got a hold of it. Edney's got a hold of it some way. We just called it down south. Well, I said, it's pretty good, too. But I knew better. And I thought I'd tell you that. Yeah. But now, can't. He said he couldn't.
Now, what were the two names of the men now? Was it Chenoweth?
Chenoweth and a Hamburg. My runs in my mind, and friends said it was a Hamburg. Now, they was over about Parkersburg somewhere.
What was the first name? Chenoweth. How would you spell it?
I'll be danged if I know. C-H-E-N-E-T-H, would that be it?
Chenoweth.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Be it T-H. Now, if I remember right, that's what friends told me. Uh-huh. And evidently this guy pulled something in his stomach in them days, no doctors, and he died. And that's a word for word that friends told me, whether it's on the up and up, which I think it was. Friends wasn't a man to lie to you.
Rocky Road to Dublin.
Tom Gardner got that. You might say the name of the border between West Virginia and Virginia, up above in Pocahontas County, Minnehaha, right along there in the old days. Tom and Armin started that tune. They said there was some Scotchman come over. He was just traveling through the country, played that tune, and said it was composed in Scotland. Now they could learn the tune. Friends said they could learn the tune in 5 minutes. So that's where it started. And when they got a new tune, friends said they wore you out with it. So they played it night and day. He said, John McCune played that Piney Mountain all night. He said, I got so sick of it, I couldn't stand it. Well, you know Freddie Cullum, don't you?
Freddie Cullum.
Lives up in Ivydale. He's got cirrhosis. He started fiddling when he's 8 or 9 years old. And he's like R.M. Mullins in with a fissure. And nobody can touch him on the cackling E and forget it.
Oh, and really,
yeah, good. Now he can play that cackling E. Yeah. And another ball of cabbage down, and that's it. And he's 30 years, he never could learn no more. And he's a good man, number one man.
He's the one to play something about the Model T Ford or something.
Yeah, I think he is. Oh, he's a clown. He's a clown.
Casey Jones.
Yeah, now Casey Jones, I got that from my grandmother. And friends played it, but he didn't play as good as she did. Mm-hmm. Ed Haley played, but he didn't like to. But Grandma Morris could play the devil out of that. And when you hit the Dusty Miller, forget it. But she, there are these three or four ways to play the Dusty Miller. Yeah. But now, she run down on a D string, something similar to what Bobby Taylor does. But she can handle a Dusty Miller. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was her favorite.
Shelvin Rock.
Yeah, that was the Carpenter's tunes. All them there, every one of them. And where's this Elzick's at?
I was going to say, I didn't see it on here. It's on the tape, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on the tape.
Is it the last one? Or?
It should have been. I don't believe Tim taped that on there. It's on there, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it, and I'll figure out where it is on there.
Yeah, it's on there. I know that.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, what do you know about the Elzicks?
Well, now the Elzicks fare well. Tom Carpenter's actually the grandfather of Elzick's Farewell. But now he got that tune. He didn't get it from the Carpenters. He got it from some neighbor back in that country. Some old man had been in the war. And my God, old Tom been dead for God, a long time. 50, 60 years. I just small. I can just remember hearing him play and watching him walk. I'm 66, but he said that tune was composed in the Civil War of this man kind of owned a plantation. He owned all the land there in the edge of what's Virginia now, way back in that country somewhere. And, you know, they were calling people to the war. He had a young boy that he thought maybe a little more of, didn't really, but he liked his turn, and they called him. His name was Elzick. And this fella played the fiddle, and that boy got ready to leave as he walked down this path to get ready to go to somewhere in Virginia to report. Why, his father told his wives he'll never see, never see Ossie no more. And he didn't. He got killed somewhere back in West Virginia someplace. And he just composed that tune, called it the Ossie's Farewell. And he done a good job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lonesome song for gun. Takes a lot of skill, don't it? You played good, Jerry.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you played good. And I know people fools that for years. Yeah, sometimes I want to tell you one thing. I can't play the fiddle very good at no time. But if I'm not in the mood, I can't play nothing. Are you that way? If I got something on my mind bothering me, I can't get with it. And I take spells, and you do too, that I cannot make no mistakes. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it for this on this tape. When we went up there and cut that thing, and I wasn't particular about it, really, we practiced 3 nights before we went. As you know, Mark Payne's a devil of a guitar player after a fiddle. I don't think he can be beat. You know, when it comes to driving, I like for a man to drive me, make me fiddle. I want him to shove me out the door when I'm in tune. And we got up there. And Jerry was under a lot of pressure, having a lot of problems, personal problems. I couldn't help, and I wasn't guilty of. I had pressure on me, and I didn't feel that I'd done my best job because I had too much in my mind. I'm going to tell you that in case I never see you anymore. I know it, and Payne know it, Kim know it. But however, all in all, since it was, I guess it was very well. But I was having a lot of problems, a lot of personal problems that beyond my control. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'll get out from under this sometime. And I didn't feel it. I felt that I could have done a better job if it had been loose. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't play music if you got a lot of stuff in your mind. But I guess they kind of liked it. I suppose they did.
Tell me about the old fellow in the picture on the wall in there again.
Let me turn this bar up. I guess you called Jerry Cantrell and about Marsh Cottrell.
Marsh Cottrell?
Marsh.
Marsh. Marsh Cottrell.
Well, like I said, I'll tell you this much right here. My great, great uncle. He had to be right, which was Dad's great-uncle, George Douglas. He was a first settler on Kennison Mountain after the war.
Kennison Mountain?
Kennison Mountain. He settled atop of Kennison Mountain. He didn't know it, but at that time, Sherman Hammond's his daddy.
Paris.
Yeah, Paris's daddy, probably. They was settled to Williams. There was two settlers in that whole country at that time. And, my great-great uncle, he belonged to the Moxon Rangers. And he and Marsh, the 12 of them in this area, they run together, see. He was, as far as people knew, he'd come somewhere Marsh Cottrell did, edge of the Ohio River around Marietta. And then he joined the Army, see. And he was so skilled, he'd become eligible, capable of being the Moxon Rangers. And about all, you know, they said he was such a a not man, such an active man, that he was almost like Louis Witzel. The enemy dreaded him, you know. He pulled all kinds of tricks on him. And I've heard my grandpa Douglas, which George Douglas was my grandpa Douglas's Uncle C, that he and Marsh Cotter was somewhere in around a little Kanawha River, and one of these jayhawkers had went in a log cabin there and stole a fiddle and made this woman cook and took the food from the little kids, and they put it in some kind of a knapsack and started down this path. And somebody put up a pole across this path. They evidently had some cow or something in there. And this rebel guy jumped up on that pole bar and straddled across, carrying his fiddle and his rifle. And Grandpa said, Charles Douglas said it had to be 600-700 yards. Old Marsh Cotter shot him right through the heart, and he fell on the fiddle and busted all to pieces. I've heard him tell that a lot. He claimed that he was like an eagle, his eye, and he had this, what is DSP, he knew when something was going to happen, and he knew when anybody was around him. And Sylvie Cotter can remember him. You couldn't walk up behind him. And here, Dad said he was always looking all the time. He was looking for something all the time. Never married. And I try to tell you, a mile back this side of Stinson, you wouldn't know where it was. It's the old Ezra Matheny place. In the old days, that was kind of a, there was a few log cabins there during the war. Old Morris got to go on there, slipping in there and seeing some woman she'd cook for him, you know. Well, I guess it got pretty chummy, and Joss told Dad about this. He was old then. And they'd come out on the back, little old back porch in that log cabin, sitting in some kind of an old chair. And she was sitting on his lap. And all of a sudden, he just give her a big shove clear out in the woodyard. And there's a rock cleft there. Dad said they measured 16 feet high. There was a bullet tucked back out of that chair just as he pushed her and jumped. They was after him, see. And he said he jumped up over that rock cliff and landed on top of 16 foot. And they never catch him. Never said they cut limbs off all around him, shooting at him. And then up here in the mouth of Senate above Ivydale, they were them jayhawkers after the war, they was after, everybody was after him. And he come to the mouth of Senate, he'd been up to see some of them other Cotterills way down on the West Fork. And he come up here to the mouth of Senate and it got dark, and he built him a little fire and he killed a squirrel or something before it got dark. And he ate that squirrel in his big beech tree, and he just climbed up in that beech tree. He knew there was after on his trail. And he let that fire burn. And they come along, you know, three of them. And I said, well, now he's around here. There's a fire. He said, there was a big service tree right beside that beech tree. Naturally, he couldn't load. He killed one of them. And he jumped over in that service tree and bent it, the top of it, and jumped out in another and got away. Went in through the pilot knob and down Race Fork. And they never did get him. And finally, you know, the jayhawkers, they fizzled out. Them thieves and outlaws and what have you. But Sylvie said it had affected him a lot. You know, he'd come to see Andrew, her daddy. They both, old Andrew Cotter. She said, he's like Dad. You know, she's 80 years old. And She said you couldn't slip up on him if a door cracked. And she said he was the only man that she ever seen her tell if could slip up on a deer. You know, just slip right up on it and kill it. And Dad and Doc White both told me at them trunks that he had, he talked to and he said he had an old musket up there hanging against the wall. He said that he couldn't hardly hold it up. He swore the barrel weighed 16 pounds, the barrel alone. And he said them damn dogs, he'd have to come out and take a stick, club them, keep them off you. And he said them trunks disappeared and nobody never knew what was in them. I can remember the old log house he lived in. Of course, he'd been gone, but they burnt that old house, burned it into ashes. I can remember the old log house, just can. And yeah, he wouldn't get among people too much. And, well, there's a lot of tales, and after I can think about it later, I could tell you, you know, what he done. And I claimed he could impersonate any kind of an animal, anything. But now Sherman Hammonds told me that most of them people stayed over and had elk in later years. He said they reigned and they had elk. And old Josh Douglas had two boys. And one of them hadn't been dead. I don't know, Fred Hanna at Far Wharf told me he forgot he thought one of them died about 28, 29. And one of them went to penitentiary for life, shot a man. And their mother, she lived way old, but he was the first settler in Kinston Mountain. Had the first sheep that was in Kinston Mountain. Mm-hmm. And he got them in Virginia somewhere. And what's funny about the Douglases, Jerry, they never close with each other. Now, my great-great-grandfather is buried up Spread across the river, but nobody knows where his grave's at.
Up where?
Spread across the river, and nobody knows where his grave's at. George Douglas and his wife's buried on Kinston Mountain. Nobody knows where the grave is. They just didn't take the stuff like that. On Father Down, my grandfather, naturally, he's buried in the cemetery on that booger hole. But they wasn't close, you know. They don't know where the people's buried. And me and Frank George is again.
Yeah.
A little bit for my great-grandmother come out of Greenbrier County, and so did his great-grandmother. She was a George. But you can't pin it down.
Well, while they were at it, and since you mentioned Booger Hole, I never did hear the story of Booger Hole.
Oh, my God. do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
I'll fix it. I'm going to show you. I'll tell you what's true. Now, if you want to, I can verify my story. My mother's still living. She's 87 years old. The bottom line is, Jerry, I was born on the tail end. Frontier, you might say in 22.
Mm-hmm.
The T models coming out, some of them had been out. Well, I tell you what, it's raised too hard up to die. And hardly have nothing. And you have two sisters. They're all right there. They're both prominent, Dad. They're worth quite a bit of money. I ain't got nothing. Only a federal. Stay here again from a place I got to stay. Part of the time, work what I can. But anyway, we lived up on Otter. At the time, well, my grandfather died in the old home place in Booger Hole. And my grandmother died a little before he did. So, that place went to my uncle. Well, my dad's brother, so Dad decided to buy and move back up there. I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, somewhere around there. Maybe not that old. Well, we moved back up there in the old Douglas place, home place. on the right hand fork of Booger Hole. You look right across the valley and see the head of Booger Hole where they killed all them people. And I know that country like you know your Birch River up there. Better, I expect.
Now, is that Calhoun County?
No, that's Clay. That's Clay. And we moved in there after I wouldn't want to Harvey Sampson, get hold of this.
Yeah.
We moved in there after they run them Sampsons out, run Harvey's daddy out and all them Ku Klux. In fact, I knew one of them Ku Klux. He'd been dead about 5 years. Yeah, a little longer, y'all. He was way up 90. And people said, well, it's haunted, you know. And my mother wasn't afraid of the devil. She still ain't. My dad wasn't either. And we moved in there, you know, and my God, we was there about 6 or 7 years, and Jerry never saw nothing like it. Now, I'm going to try to fill this in darts. I'm not much on telling a story. I got an uncle that's worth a lot of money. He bought that old place. He owns 300 acres of land in there altogether. And he built a fine house, and he never moved in. It's still sitting up there empty. Right on the old home place where we live. You'd hear people coming up this little road riding a horse wide open. But you never get there. Never get there. People talk all night. You couldn't understand what they say, talk all night. And you'd see people dressed in white going every direction once in a while. You never catch up to them, they disappear. And God, I tell you, it just beat anything that I ever saw. And I can tell you, I can tell them million tales about that place. And my mother and my sisters verify me. We're sitting out on the porch one evening. We didn't have nothing, cornbread and molasses. And every night, this one particular time, mother's off clean, barefooted, you know. She'd make us go in that kitchen, take a wash pan, and wash your feet. Well, my two sisters went in there. They washed theirs. And my oldest sister that night, she went ahead of me, and then we'd come back around the back way, you know, just had a three-room house. Well, I went in to wash mine, and as Walt went through, there's a woman dressed in white, just couldn't see her feet. There's an old split plank door there that opened to go in the kitchen with one of them string latches. God, this woman went behind that door, and I thought, now that's Helen, my older sister, trying to scare me. I'll wash my feet, and I'll keep my eye on that door, and I'll come back, I'll ease through there and jump in there and scare her. And I come back through there, and I made a big lunge behind that door. There wasn't nothing there. And mother didn't have no window screens, windows raised right by that door. God, I didn't go out the door. I just took that old blind log, went right out that window. Went around and I said, Helen, did you try to scare me? Why? She said, no, I've been sitting here all the time. And mother looked at me and laughed. Dad was gone that night. She got a chance. She said, I seen that other night in front of my bed. Walked right through in front of me. Then another time I went over on this ridge. Tickled to death, you know, squirreling. Oh, there's a lot of game. I got on this ridge, place over there called Battle Run. Big Otter, I took Kim over there, you can ask her. I said, no, I ain't going down in there, Kim. I'll take you up top of the ridge, you look down, I ain't going down. I said, I took an oath, never go in there anymore. And she'll tell you when she sees you. But this time, I wasn't afraid of nothing, I still ain't, but I don't deal with stuff like that. There's no explanation. I got out on this ridge, remember I had a new Winchester, the first Winchester come out. It cost $6. And I don't know how long I saved by that shotgun. It's 12 gauge, one of them long barrel boys. It'd tear you in two, but it'd bring a game. I got out this ridge and I shot two of these big fox squirrels. The squirrels was thick and big chestnut oak tree there. I thought, well, I'll just sit down here and rest. I could see some more cutting right out in front of me. I ain't no hurry to rest a while or get another or two and quit. I never was no hog about anything like it. And I was sitting there, Jerry, and there's a little path that all them travelers traveled in the old days. I looked out that path, and here come a woman dressed in white, and her hair was so black it didn't look like a crow, and it drugged the ground, and I never could see her face. She had something over her face, never heard such crying in my life. And the first thought in me, I knew some people was making moonshine in that holler. I thought, now there's a bunch of women down there and they've got in a fight. And she's leaving. And she come up, I wasn't a bit more scared than I am now. She come up before the mirror to the middle of that yard. And she just went up in there like that. Just like that. I sat there and I rubbed my eye, thought, now I know dang well that I seen that. And things got still.